Welcome to PS Let's Talk Love. I'm Marcia.
And I'm Solveig. We're communication professors and dating and relationship coaches. And in each episode, we'll be talking about dating, love, relationships, and all their complexities.
We're here to help you navigate the sometimes awful, sometimes exhilarating, and oftentimes bonkers elements of all things relationships.
We want to emphasize that this podcast is separate from our teaching and research at our university jobs. It is, however, part of our desire to bring dating and relationship support to folks everywhere.
Let's talk love.
Hello, hello. We're excited to talk with you all about Ted Lasso, but before we do that, we're going to do our little check-in. So, Marcia, what are you loving this week?
Well, like any good pop culture nerd, the Oscars were last night as we're recording this, and I am loving some of the people who won awards last night, and specifically their acceptance speeches. There was a couple, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I admittedly have not seen, but have heard really wonderful things about. A lot of the actors from that movie won awards, and the movie itself won an award, you know, was the best movie. And specifically, I think it was their acceptance speeches that were just so enthusiastic and sweet and, you know, tearful and all of the things you want out of a great acceptance speech, which I feel like you don't always get at award shows. Like I get really annoyed when people get up there and are just like naming like 50 people you've never heard of. I understand that those people were probably very important to them, but you're like, I don't need a list. I want you to give a speech. And people gave a speech. It was just really, I don't know. It's always uplifting. You hear a lot of like, or this season, award season, a lot of folks who haven't been recognized for their efforts for some of them decades, and are like really kind of getting their recognition that they deserve. Michelle Yeoh was the first Asian woman to win an Oscar for Best Actress. And I'm forgetting her co-star's name. Key, I know is the part of his first name. He was a child actor, and then like there's no place for him in the industry for like decades. And now, you know, he's back acting and won an award. There's just some really like sweet things that happened. So I am still kind of loving that. I'm listening to all the like recap analysis about the different movies and different actors and loving it.
Did you watch any of the films that were nominated for Oscars? Did you watch any of them and like any of them yourself?
I don't think I watched any of them. I'm admittedly, I like pop culture, but I'm not a huge movie person. I am more of a TV person. Like I like a longer story. I like time with, oh, actually I have seen one. I saw Maverick, Top Gun.
Oh yeah. Okay.
That was nominated, but everything else. I mean, I saw Wakanda Forever, which wasn't nominated, but Angela Bassett was nominated. I've seen a few of the movies that people were nominated for. Mm-hmm. And I have several of the movies that were nominated on my list of ones to watch, but like, I feel like I have to be in the perfect mood to watch a movie. I don't know why sitting down for 2.5 hours sounds so daunting when I'll sit there for like 6 hours and watch a TV show. I don't know why it's different, but it is. Yeah, I need to watch them. Everyone has told me that Everything Everywhere All at Once is magnificent, and I believe them. I just have to be in the right headspace.
Yeah, makes sense. I think in this age of like those of us who are consuming TikToks and TV shows, there's like a lot of shorter attention span kinds of things too. And a movie is like, you know, a lot of those films that are up for Oscars are also like 3 hours long. So I feel like you have to be like, okay, I'm going to sit down and pay attention to this thing that is often a lot of the movies that are nominated for Oscars are rather heavy in terms of their content too. I haven't seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, but I have been meaning to, cause I've heard really good things about it as well. But, yeah, I feel like there's like this, just this like energy that it takes, which is weird to be like, I'm going to watch this 3 hour movie that might also be like tough content in a lot of cases. Yeah. So there might be that too.
Yeah, I mean, like one of the movies nominated and one it won award for, I can't remember if it was original screenplay or adapted screenplay, was Women Talking. And I've also heard that that is great. It has great actresses in it. The writer clearly is excellent. But it's like about women in a, I think, an Amish community who have been sexually abused. And I'm like, I know those things happen. I'm not hiding from that. But, you know, when I, sometimes my entertainment, I just need it to be a little bit lighter.
Yeah, fair.
And the world has been so heavy. I feel like I'm like, oh, I can't. I just like, I can't sit through that. Anyway, so yeah, I haven't, maybe in the summer when things are lighter, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like literally fair. Lighter. But yeah, I'll try to watch some of them maybe at some point, or I'll just watch Jurassic Park for the 400th time. That seems more likely.
I haven't watched very many of them, but I try, you know, every year I'm like, I'm going to watch all the films that are nominated for awards. I think that to myself. And I got as far as watching The Banshees of Inisherin, which I don't know if it won any awards. I haven't looked at, did that win any awards? Do you remember?
No, I don't think it won anything. I mean, it was nominated for a bunch.
Yeah.
But not that I remember.
Well, it sort of caught my interest because it's set in Ireland, and obviously I've been spending a lot of time in Ireland lately. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of curious about that one. And my friend had told me it was really good. So I watched it last weekend or the weekend before. And I mean, I thought it was a really interesting movie. Similarly to what we've just been describing, it was like, I was trying to tell my mom about it because I'm like, it's beautifully filmed. It's a beautifully filmed movie. It tells a really, I think, interesting story. It's not happy.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a bleak story about a small town in Ireland in the early 1900s. And it's supposed to be like a dramedy, but also it's like, it's kind of tough. The content's kind of tough. At least that was my experience. Anyone listening, maybe you had a different experience of it, but yeah, it's really beautiful though. And so if you want to watch like beautiful Irish landscape, definitely watch that film.
Yeah, I started it and then got distracted and didn't watch any of it. But I like Colin Farrell, so.
Yeah, it's a slow move. It's a slow moving, thoughtful, slow Irish village movie. However, I will say I did get very excited because in the opening credits in the opening scene, I think, I was like, I've been there. Like, I know I've been there. And so I looked it up and indeed I have been to the place where one of the scenes from this film, I have been to the place and it's really beautiful. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that is
doesn't
cool.
Happen that often. You're like, yeah. I have been to that place that's in that movie, at least for me. I suppose if you live in like LA or New York City or Toronto, you're like, I've been there. Yeah. I get coffee there. But yeah.
Right. Well, we live in Alaska, so we don't see much. I see the Coastal Trail on the Alaska Daily, which somehow is still airing.
I kind of lost interest, but
I haven't gone back to it. Sorry, Hillary Swank.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
What about you? What are you loving this week?
Well, it's sort of similar theme, but different in that, well, first of all, I guess the background is that I was listening to my celebrity crush, Pedro Pascal, on an interview recently talk about his childhood and how he was encouraged creatively. And that was on my mind as I was packing. I was listening to this interview as I was packing the other night. I drove up to Fairbanks and I drove with my niece this time, which I was like, thanks, Roy Kent, in our conversation about like thinking about how you interact with young people. We had that for anyone who's been listening along. We talked about that a few weeks ago. So I had this nice drive with my niece and she's 8. And for the most part, and for anyone who doesn't know, the drive from Anchorage to Fairbanks is, you know, 7 to 8 hours, depending on how many times you stop. And so for the first part of the drive, for the first probably half of the drive, she was like listening to her, looking at her iPad, doing things like that. And then the second half, we were listening to music together. And we listened to a song that really captured her attention. And then she was like, oh, can we listen to that song again? And, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with children, but I imagine parents do this a lot where they listen to the same song over and over again. For me, it's sort of novel because I don't get that time much. So, of course, I was like, yeah, let's definitely listen to this song again, which we then ended up listening to the song like 25 times. But it was so, first of all, it was just so joyful to be there with my niece. But second of all, what was really cool to watch was as we kept listening to the song, she was like, I wonder if there's a TikTok video to this song. And I was like, yeah, that's a good question. Like if there's a dance video. And I was like, that's a good question. But we were driving and we were going to look it up. And so then as we were driving and listening to the song in between songs, she started like composing what she thought a dance video or a music video should look like for this song. So that was adorable to listen to it. And it was also really neat to just like listen to a child in their creative process. And I was thinking about Pedro Pascal and how like people encouraged him. And of course, I'm interested in people's creative process. So I was like, yes, tell me more. So the last 2 hours of the trip, we were talking about this dance that she would have seen, this video that she would see that she would love to create to the song. And then I had said like, oh, maybe you can perform it for, you know, our family when we get to Fairbanks. And so when we got here, she like made flyers for her performance that she posted around our house while we were eating like after dinner. And then I was the tech for her, you know, the speaker and the music while she did this dance and whole storyline that she enacted to the story. And it made me so happy. And it was so much fun to like be with her through the whole process. And also just think about each of our creative processes and like how we let ourselves be free and like ideating and being open. Like it was so fun to watch someone who doesn't have a lot of critique, right? Already. She's just like, I think we should, then a dragon's going to do this. And then, you know, as children do, it just, so I guess I'm loving the creative process. I'm loving time with my niece and my family, and also the ways that we let ourselves be free in creativity. That's what I'm thinking about this today as we check in.
What was the song?
It was a remake. It was a cover of the song Karma Police by Radiohead that was by another musician called Lissy. It is, I think it's just a cover. It's a short cover. Yeah, Karma Police remake. It's pretty intense. It's kind of almost like a metal. I don't know. I'm really bad at genres of music, so don't ask me. But it was like a sort of like a metal-y metal. Probably metal people would disagree with me. It was sort of like a metal techno version of the Radiohead song originally, Karma Police.
Okay.
Yeah.
I respect her commitment to like the performance of it all. Did you ever do that kind of stuff when you were?
For sure. Yes. Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I loved doing that kind of stuff. So I was like, but I don't know that I like, well, I probably did make flyers at some point. I don't know. I mean, she was like really like, you know, making tickets for all of us to buy to be able to like attend the concert, the performance. Mm-hmm. She really went all in and it was adorable.
I know it's so nice when like to see children not have like the shame or embarrassment that we develop as adults. Like it just, yeah, I think that I imagine that is a big part of why parenting is such a delight for people, right? Is you get to live that vicariously through children and witness it in all its glory.
Yeah, I agree. And it also made me really happy because I was thinking about, you know, technology and I think, you know, thinking like, oh, like her mom had been like, is it okay if she's on her iPad? She'll probably be on her iPad the whole time. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's like an 8-hour drive. I'm not going to be like, don't be on your iPad. Like that doesn't feel like my choice to make. And so like, of course. So it's kind of neat to see that a kid can both like be immersed in whatever, I don't even know, like video game she was playing or movie she was watching on her iPad half the time. And then to then be like, zoom out of that and then be able to be so creative also was like neat to see that an 8-year-old can do both.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I'm jealous that she had an iPad to be on while driving between Fairbanks and Anchorage because she doesn't know what it's like to suffer through with no entertainment.
It was so interesting to think about how many times as a child that was, yeah, definitely not an option for me as a child.
I think about how when I was on basketball trips in college, definitely not in high school, but in college, that's when those mini DVD players had just come out. Do you remember those?
I don't remember them, no.
They were, I mean, they're like the size of like a really small, like a tablet, like the probably like, but they flipped open and the screen itself was smaller, but you could put a DVD in and you could watch a movie on it. But you had to then carry all of your DVDs with you to watch. Like,
did you have one?
I think I had one by like kind of toward the end of college, just because for basketball, we traveled so much. I mean, we went to Seattle every other week during the second half of the semester, pretty much every other week. And so, and then you'd have to like drive like 5 hours to wherever the college was that we were playing at. So we did a lot of that. I think I had one, but it would also like die really quick, right? The battery only lasted like maybe 90 minutes. It was real. I just think about how much better people have it now.
I know, so many
entertainment at your fingertip.
Yeah, kids, you're lucky.
Yeah, you guys don't know how bad it was
back in our day. All right, well, let's get into Ted Lasso.
Listeners, so we are going to be talking about Ted Lasso season 2, episode 7. The title of this episode is Headspace. And a quick recap. So Roy and Keeley are the perfect couple, or are they? Keeley is feeling a little too much connection and just needs some damn space. Her approach to communicating that leaves much to be desired, but with some help from the person you'd least expect, Jamie Tart, Roy understands. Meanwhile, Ted is trying to open himself up to therapy and Dr. Sharon. And finally, Nate is riding high with all the positive attention. Unfortunately, it's still not enough to make him feel whole.
It's a great summary.
I thought like there was three very distinct stories happening yes. in this. And in terms of themes, I think one theme that rose to the top for me is this notion of feeling seen, whether it's, you know, Nate feeling seen as like an excellent coach and leader, Ted feeling seen by the therapist, and I think also Keeley feeling seen by Roy and her needs is the, so that's that overarching theme of like needing to feel seen, which we know is something that humans need. That makes us feel good, is when people can see us for who we are and what we need.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I guess I just want to add into, I mean, I know the episode is called Headspace, but I also think there that, you know, if we were to just like look at sort of a secondary thread, there's a lot of a value in space that's happening here that I think might also just be an interesting thing to look at, like feeling seen, and then also the value that space can bring us at different times came up for me a lot as I was listening and watching the episode.
Okay. Well, who do you want? Let's talk about it. Who do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with Ted. I like the idea of starting with Ted today. I mean, yeah, this is, gosh, Ted's like, he's finally like giving it a go, right? He's like trying. I mean, the whole beginning of the episode of him, it's ridiculous. I should have timed how long. Was that like 3 minutes of him moving in Dr. Sharon's office from like different place to different place to be like, get ready to talk, upon which he decides he actually doesn't want to talk, you know, like he is struggling with this idea of feeling. I mean, I don't know. I think it seems like right now, it seems like at the beginning, at least, it seems like he's not ready to be seen.
Mm-mm. Yeah. The discomfort is palpable. Like I'm actually amazed. I think through all of the Ted scenes, because it's all with Dr. Sharon, I was watching her a lot, and like her ability to remain still and quiet through all of that, because when Ted was doing that first, like the thing he does, right? He fills the air with thoughts and his own internal narrative or narration. And then all the moving around, it made my skin crawl. I was so annoyed. I was like, get the fuck, just sit down. And her ability to just like calmly sit there was really interesting. And I think like she is seeing him, right? Like she mentions yes. at the end of that or toward the end of that scene where she said, oh, it started the second you walked in the room. And it's like, yeah, Ted, like she's seeing you, buddy.
Yeah, what an amazing actor. Like, she's so good in that. It just be, I was like, would she, is she, are we sure she's not a therapist in her real life? Like, she's so amazing at just being, right, like still and present and patient with his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting watching Ted how, so he's there at her office because of the panic attack he had. And I think that was at the end of the last episode. He ended up in her office, having had a panic attack, having had to run out of the game before it was finished. And now this seems like the follow-up, right? Like she helped him in some way get through whatever he, you know, was happening in the immediate moment. And now it's time to like step back and be like, okay, where is this coming from? What's going on? Let's try to, you know, dissect the problem. And so I think that this whole experience with Ted is such a great example of how like people have to come to their solution on their own. Mm-hmm. In this case, the solution being like actually engaging with a therapist. Like you can't force it. If somebody is not ready, they are not ready. And like Ted is such a great example, right? He's like nervous, and then the next scene with her, he's hostile. He's like
angry. Yeah.
Yeah. And finally he's able to like soften a bit by the third, but like just because he knows that he should doesn't mean that he's ready.
Yeah. That's excellent. It's an excellent point. And I also just think like watching that thread of, you know, giving someone space, like Dr. Sharon is so brilliant at just being like, you know, like you said, letting him settle that first time, letting him come and go and being like, okay, I'm still here. Right. And not taking that personally, which obviously it's her profession. And she does speak to, you know, if, I mean, she calls him in certain ways, but is like giving him the space to like make that decision. And she seems to know what she's doing. I mean, from whenever I can't remember if she came in on episode one of this season, but whenever she came in, like she has just been giving him space to come to her, but she seems that she knows that he will, mm-hmm. or that he likely will in his own time. And she keeps making these offers, right? I think these are great things to just notice if you're like, could see that someone could use some help, but they're not ready for it yet, right? Being like, hey, I'm here. Hey, I'm here. And letting that timeline be the timeline that it is pretty beautiful. And she does that really well.
And it's such a Ted move, right? Like that's sort of his perspective with players too. But I totally agree. She is so patient and just like leaves the door open. And even with these kind of three attempts he has, right? What we're led to believe is it's not like he ran out of her office and she called him and was like, hey, you need to come back to therapy. She just like kept the space open for him. And I also thought it was really beautiful how I think it was the third time he came back. He said he made some comment about like, did you expect me or you didn't expect me to be back? And she was like, no, I did, because you said you didn't quit things. And I think like that was the first like little step toward like, hey, I see you, and him being able to receive that.
Yeah.
And it all came from her ability to like sit back and just sort of listen and observe and see where he was at.
Yeah. Yeah. And then her, I don't know if I wrote down the exact quote, maybe you did, when she's like, I mean, I think feeling seen also in this case is also her saying, hey, I mean, I'm sure it was a therapeutic method to be like, hey, I took it personally when you said that I'm not authentic in what I do. Did you write down that quote? I'm looking to see if I did. But, you know, to say like, I was bothered when you said that I don't care about what I do, because I do care about what I do. And being able to sort of give a bit of her story there, I think also like maybe let them, I don't think that she needed to feel seen, but by sharing something of herself, there was some intimacy that was built there.
Well, I think like that's what we know about disclosure, right? Is when we share pieces of ourselves, it helps create trust. And I think typically you don't see therapists sharing much, but I do think like basically what Ted said when he was on his rant in his second attempt at therapy is like, you don't know me. You don't care. You're just listening because you get paid to do that. Like, there's no authenticity here. It is like complete bullshit. I mean, he literally says bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think she received that in a way that, number one, her calmness was impressive.
Yes.
And her ability to both be offended, which is what she says. She says she was offended by what he said, but also to receive it and understand like what his underlying feelings were. And then taking that and going, okay, so how do I, as a professional, like address this concern that he has, which is that this is inauthentic because I'm being paid and I don't care about him, which is not accurate. Mm-hmm. And so her ability then to say, you offended me, like, is her then being vulnerable and giving him that little thing that he needs, right? She gave a little bit of herself that lets him then be comfortable with her. So it's this like really interesting, like, I don't, this whole interaction between the two of them really made me think about when we study and teach communication, so much of the emphasis is on how we create meaning between, like, right, the communication is what happens between the two people. That's where the meaning is created. And I thought that this was such a beautiful example of that, is like them kind of working out that trust and what this relationship would be in real time.
Yeah, those are beautiful. Those are beautiful observations. And I, you know, when he sort of finally, you know, softens enough to be able to settle and like actually sit and have a conversation, I like that, you know, also, I think in just another way of allowing him to feel seen, she makes these jokes, right? You know, she says the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. I can't be your mentor without being your tormentor. And he smiled, you know, he says, well, I liked that, you know, and she's like seeing him and naming the, like using his humor with him. And also it seems like being herself in as she is as a therapist, you know, she is like so different from him, and that he seems in so many ways to just want to like please everyone around him and like be tending to everyone. And she doesn't seem to care, but she does care, too. And she shows it in these certain ways. It's just really interesting watching their dynamic together.
Mm-hmm. It seems like finally, I mean, not finally, she has been seeing him, I think, for a while. Mm-hmm. I think that he is maybe just starting to see her in this interaction.
Yeah. And starting to allow himself to be seen, allow her to see him more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think that much of what Ted does, especially like if we see the example in the first time he walks into the office, is this defense mechanism, right? Like if you chitter chatter about like surface level things, which she kind of mentioned something about that when he asked about her favorite book. Mm-hmm. It is this wall that goes up, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're talking about those things, you don't have to be vulnerable, right? Like your favorite book is not a vulnerable moment. I don't typically. And so I think like, yeah, he also now, like, this is probably very scary to like take that wall away and have to talk about something real with someone like her.
Yeah. So interesting too, because in so many ways, I mean, I think this is like more than one thing can be true, right? In so many ways, he's so thoughtful and so skillful in many ways, I think, at how he coaches and how he shows up as a leader, all of these things that we can admire about him. And also, he also seems to use that as, like you said, a bit of a protection to not not get as deep as he could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to say about Ted?
No, I look forward to his therapeutic journey.
Yeah. Go Ted.
Yeah.
Go Ted. Okay. Way to finally settle. Yeah.
All right. So who do you want to talk about now? I mean, we could briefly mention Rebecca if you want.
I mean, Rebecca's just interesting in terms of feeling seen, and that it's, yeah, sure. Let's talk about Rebecca. Just, I mean, yeah. I don't talk about it a lot, but just to say, like, you know, we know now that it's Sam that she's having this interaction with. Right. But she's one of her, seems to me like one of her biggest lines in this, or biggest, you know, sort of moments in this episode, is hesitating to respond. Right. There's the whole bit about her, the three dots, and her not responding. We know it's her now, because she says that, you know, what if it doesn't work? What if I am seen, or what if I see him and it isn't what I want it to be? Right. I didn't write down the lines exactly. Did you?
I didn't. No, it's such a small little scene. And then Higgins gives some like excellent insight, as usual, basically saying like, tell the truth. You're, you know, I don't remember exactly what he said, but basically like, you're scared that the real version of that will not live up to your expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, what if I meet him and it goes wrong, you know? And so, yeah, I think that like, she is hesitating, you know, she's for all kinds of reasons. Fear is sort of getting the best of her in this episode, and we can see that Sam's like, oh my gosh, this person hasn't responded in many days. I can keep seeing these three dots. And then they have this really cute moment that I just want to pause on, where they bump into each other, right, in the hallway. And they do both see each other for a moment, right? Like, they see each other. She says, call me Rebecca, right? Like, there's some interest. There's just like an interesting moment that, of course, we as the audience know, like, oh my gosh, they're texting each other. But presumably they don't know that at this point. It's interesting to watch.
Yeah. Well, and she almost says exactly what he says about phones. Like, there's this, yeah, and she kind of looks at him, like, talk about like seeing someone. Like, yeah. There's a look she gives him that I think is, one, so well done by Hannah Waddingham, that like is so loaded. And yeah. Also, as outsiders, we're like, this is him.
Yeah, it's almost like she almost recognizes it, right? Like, if her intuition was to say like, this is the kind of person you want, even, right? Like, maybe it's not about Sam, but this, yeah, this kind of like thoughtful ability in another person to articulate things is what she wants. And then they walk on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I feel like it's such a small little interaction. I'm just looking forward to seeing it play out more.
Yeah, me too. Well, Roy and Keely is a pretty big part of this episode. What were things that you noticed about them that stood out to you in their dynamic?
So, I mean, I think just to give us a sense of where we are with them, they've been together, it seems like, for a decent amount of time now. It seems like they're pretty much living together. I mean, it seems like at the end of this, like, he must have his own place, but they're basically cohabitating. And they're also working together, which is a lot of time together, right? Like, yeah. To be together at home all the time, to drive to work together, to be at work in the same place, that is a lot of FaceTime that you are getting with your partner. And that can be a bit much, even if they're lovely.
Yeah, it's very relatable. And as I was watching this, I just have to pause and say, I was thinking about you and like how you and Dustin had spent so much time together during the pandemic. And like, when you watch this, are you like, oh, I get it, Keely?
Oh, that opening scene of him, like the sequence of him just being there always, is 100% how I felt with Dustin. And he's sometimes still where I'm like, can you just like go sit somewhere else? Even like, and he's lovely. I love Dustin.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not, right? No. I mean, yeah. We love Roy. We love Dustin. We love, yes. Yes.
But oh my God, it's like, you're like, I just want to look at something that's not your face, or I just want to like move through the world, not with you right there, like interacting with me. And I think, you know what, Keely, over the course of this episode, we see her interacting with a few people and she's saying different things. And I think like one of the things she's getting at is a thing we've talked about on this podcast about what makes relationships hard. And it's not that like, it's not, I don't think it's the things that people often think of. I think that what we're seeing here is it's that you have to like consider the other person. You just have to consider them because they're there. And like, you're in here, like if you're a kind, generous person, you are going to be thinking about that other human that's in the room when they are physically there. And even if they say, don't worry about me, you're like, but I'm going to some degree because you're here. And it is such a, like, it's just this thing. It is like a little tiny weight on your shoulder, and it's most of the time not bad at all. And then sometimes you're like, just get this goddamn weight off my shoulder. I want to like only think about me. And I think that like, that's one of the things I saw that I related to in this is I'm like, yes, I know exactly how you just want to eat your toast without somebody standing there or like sitting in the room with you reading while you're trying to do something else. Like, oh, I feel for you, Keely. Girl, I feel you.
Yeah. And I feel like any of our listeners who went through the pandemic and had like one or two other people that you're around probably can relate to this as well. So relatable.
Yeah. Well, when I was looking at this, one of the things that came up for me too is a theory that we talk about a lot in communication. And I think we've done a couple episodes on this is relational dialectics, which is a theory that helps us kind of explain like the needs we want or we have within a relationship. And specifically, this example is a great one, I think, of independence, dependence, right? Like we need both those things in a relationship. We want it. And we see Keely like clearly not getting her need for independence and autonomy met. And one of the things I really like about this theory is like, it's very explicit in saying just because you feel that pull for that need doesn't mean there's something wrong in the relationship. That is a normal thing that you are going to want and need. And like, I think that I feel like I want to tell Keely that.
Yes, 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 I know. Yeah. I mean, we see her in these different moments. I wrote down, you know, for anyone who's like, sometimes I wonder where, you know, you can also go back and listen to our episode on relational dialectics, but like this idea of like connection and autonomy and the idea that sometimes we are desiring more connectedness with somebody. Sometimes we're desiring more autonomy or independence, right? And like both of those needs and desires are natural, just like you said, and they're healthy and they make sense for people. And it's, you know, it's okay to have these, and we don't always desire them at the same time as our partner does. Like this episode illustrates all of that beautifully. Keely at one point when she's smoking, I just think this is cute. She's like, look, I think Roy is the cat's pajamas. I like that they use the cat's pajamas expression. Like, may we all use you're the cat's pajamas more in our lives. I think Roy is the cat's pajamas, but sometimes I need a moment to myself. Like, that's so, like, I feel like I want you to like go give her a hug and be like, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, which sort of everybody does around her at that point.
Yeah. And I also just want to know, I completely relate to her like hiding and trying to find like places to hide as somebody who has hidden in my, like the amount of times I went into my closet and closed the curtain across it and quietly like had headphones in and was just like scrolling my phone during the pandemic to be like, please just stop talking to me.
Don't read your book near me. Don't
turn me on.
Don't do anything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and that leads, I think, you know, again, this is such a great application of this relational dialectics theory, because one of the things that can happen when you aren't getting your needs met is like this feeling of tension. Yep. And we see like Keely feeling that tension, but
yes,
refusing to address it. Like she's kind of talking to her friends about it, but she's not actually addressing the conflict, which is like clearly she needs some autonomy and independence. And instead of addressing it, she like completely neglects it and it blows up, which is like what happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she gets to this sort of explosion point, which is also, I think, relatable if you've ever been somebody who's not actually expressed what you need and it keeps happening, like then it comes out in this way that probably is, I mean, I think we can, I don't think Keely intends to be mean to Roy in that situation. Like she's trying really hard to like figure out how to is it okay for me to need this? And oh my gosh, I love him, but he's around all the time. Right. And so it comes out in this sort of explosion instead of maybe a more mindful conversation that she could have had.
I also think that this is a nice demonstration of how these two, based on what we know about them, haven't really had to navigate a complicated adult relationship with like a real equal. It seems like Keely has always just sort of had these like fun little light dynamics with footballers. Roy seemingly hasn't really had a serious dating history. So this is also probably the first time either of them is dealing with like this type of conflict or even like this type of need. The like navigating it, especially for the first time, can be super challenging because you're like, what is wrong with me? Why do I want him not here? I'm pushing that back. And then I freak out and then he freaks out, and like neither of them seem to really have a grasp of how to navigate this with any sort of like maturity.
Yeah. I mean, and I understandable. I mean, sometimes we have tough times. Like, she's probably not her best self when she's like jumping on the couch and exploding. And then he's like, fuck this, and walks out, you know, like in true Roy Kent style. Like, right. Leaves the situation, and then they're like, you know, it looks, as far as we can tell, like not talking when they drive to work the next day and having this like time, which is actually what both of them needed, it looks like, to be, let's just like, can we all like just acknowledge that sometimes what we just need is to have a little bit of time so we can come back to our best self.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Time and space, right? Yeah. Like time to process, yeah, and to de-escalate your emotions. Like, it's important. And
yeah.
And like, clearly I thought that the morning after that fight was an interesting one, because she was kind of like, oh, I feel like, it seemed to me, she was like, oh, I feel bad about what I said. Like, let's get back to where we were. And he was still like really upset, which I also understand. Like, basically what she had been doing is going around talking to her friends about him and not to him. And like, that's embarrassing too. And so then he's using silent treatment. He is so clearly not over the interaction that has just happened, probably because, and I think this happens in conflict too, is the person who starts the conflict has like been thinking about it. Right. They've been Keely has been stewing. She's been thinking about it. She's been talking to her friends, and then she kind of blows, but then it's like out. This is the first he was learning of it. So I think they're in like two different places as well. Like, they're not seeing each other where they're at in terms of this conflict.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can feel, I mean, I imagine if he didn't have any clue, which it seems like, I mean, he knows that she was talking, which those scenes are hilarious when he's just like, were you talking about me? Okay. Like, he just doesn't, yeah. I love that about him. He's like confident enough to be like, yeah, cool. My girlfriend's doing what she needs to do. Okay. Let's keep going. You know, like, yeah. He doesn't appear to be thrown off by it, but then it, you know, I mean, it can feel like you're blindsided if somebody has been letting something build and not actually speaking about it, and then, you know, explodes or says what it is that they need. Yeah, great point that he's like, if he really had no clue until this point and thinks he maybe needs some time to process, which they get. And then Jamie Tart says something wise.
Jamie Tart coming in with the truth bomb. Who would have thought? Not I. Probably not Roy. Definitely not Keely. We're, you know, through a series of like very humorous interactions on the pitch, Roy comes to the realization that like sometimes the best thing that you can do for somebody that you care about is to give them space, and that giving them space isn't neglecting them or rejecting them. It's actually the kindest thing that you can do. And then he realizes that maybe he overreacted a little bit. And because, you know, once again, does all the Roy Kent things that are great.
Yeah. And appears to then see Keely in that situation. Right. I mean, then there's the super sexy scene where he's made this beautiful bath for her and is like understanding that she needs some time and acknowledging that and all of the things that he could do. I mean, he just really shows up there, right? Mm-hmm. Like all of the things he could do to heal and repair that he seems to do in that scene. And she in turn then appears that she feels seen and sees him in what he's able to do as a partner and how he's able to be. And it is such a beautiful coming together of these two people who have had a conflict and have found a way through it.
Mm-hmm. I think what's really beautiful about it too is how both of them like release any pride, mm-hmm. Right? Like they both, Roy could still, I mean, if we're thinking about it, Roy still could be like pretty annoyed at her for how she went about addressing this and not talking to him directly and talking to all of her friends and his colleagues too, by the way, about it. Like he has, I would say, arguably a right to still hold some like anger or frustration. And instead of that, he chooses to like hear what it is, see her, hear what it is she needed, and like just provide that. And I think like that's the other really tough thing in relationships is when dealing with conflict, you have to be able to release that pride and, you know, like look at it as like it's the two of you are a team and you have the same goals. You want each other to be happy and healthy and feel all good things. And sometimes that means understanding your role and also, I don't know, ignoring or at least releasing the fact that somebody maybe didn't communicate that in the best way possible.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're both really good in that moment at letting it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Letting the other stuff go and just appreciating one another in that moment.
Yeah. I'm curious, did you watch Sex and the City at all? Like, are you familiar with it?
Not enough to remember that scene. Did you?
Yeah, when the Roy Keeley storyline was starting, like when you could see what the issue was, it immediately did make me think of that particular episode. Because the whole premise of that episode she was watching is Carrie and Aiden end up having to live together with all of their stuff in her one, you know, I guess it's a studio apartment, and they're just like on top of each other and she's complaining and like freaking out, and then they have a blow up fight, and it, you know, it's basically the same premise, right? It's all about needing space and not being able to communicate that effectively. And then at the end of that episode of Sex and the City, that same song that Roy plays it. Anyway, there's like a bunch of parallels to that episode. I even think, and listeners, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I did not like zoom in, but I think Keeley is even wearing a necklace that says her name, which is like what Carrie from Sex and the City did. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like Keeley is a Sex and the City fan is what we are learning.
Is the whole bath scene like also a thing that happens in that episode as well?
So there is a scene where Aiden like puts together this like very romantic bath for Carrie. That happens like way earlier in their relationship, but it is like a kind of similar, like he did this romantic thing. In Sex and the City, they sort of come to this agreement, like, which I think was a mature one, basically, where she was like, hey, when I come home, like I've been out in the world, I need like, I don't know if she says the time, but I need some time to decompress. So like, just don't talk to me when I come home until I'm ready to talk. And so it's like, kind of shows that and how quickly she went from like, she goes and sits by herself for like 20 seconds. And then it's like, okay, I'm good.
I just needed that moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Relational things that people are dealing with.
Yeah. Also,
especially newly cohabitating people or people that have been through a pandemic.
Right. I mean, for the record, when Dustin was annoying the shit out of me, I was also telling him. I mean, I wasn't saying it like that. I was just like, hey, I'm gonna like do something by myself. But yes. Yeah. Also, no, I have, rewatching this episode made me a little bit nervous about Keeley and Roy in a way that I wasn't nervous before about their relationship. I don't love it compared to Carrie and Aiden.
Oh, because they break up, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and Aiden is kind of looked at as like this really perfect ideal, but like not right for Carrie, not her great love. Sorry, spoilers for Sex and the City, which is like 100 years old.
Yeah.
So I was, I don't know, I was just like, huh, I wonder if they're trying to draw a parallel here. It'll be interesting in season three to see what they do with them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about this more as we get towards the last few episodes. It is, I didn't know that reference or that parallel, but I hope they stay together. But
all I want, I don't know if I've said this before, all I want, listeners, all I want at the end of Ted Lasso season three, because I think season three is supposed to be the last season.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Kent, side of the pitch, baby and a baby Bjorn. That's what I
want.
You
have mentioned. You
have many mentioned. Times. Have I mentioned it on the podcast?
You have, just yes.
You? No, I just want to say it again. Roy Kent, baby and a baby Bjorn. That's
Bill
all I
Lawrence.
Want.
Bill Lawrence.
Bill Lawrence, Fred are Goldstein. You listening?
Are you listening? Marcia has a plot request.
Yeah, maybe I'll put Bill Lawrence's name in the show notes. Maybe he'll like Google his name and listen. Bill Lawrence, do you know what I want? I want Roy Kent on the sideline with a baby and a baby Bjorn.
Does sound like a great scene.
Right? Like,
are you just avoiding talking about Nate now?
Yes, I fucking hate Nate.
Okay, listeners, we should probably talk about Nate just a little bit because he's a pretty solid character in this episode who is appreciating, as you said earlier, feeling seen, and also it is also seems to be just like an empty hole of like misery that he keeps returning to. That's not a very nice thing to say, but he's... He doesn't seem like he's able to get enough.
No. Well, he's not getting it from the place he wants it.
Right. Yeah, like, which is sad.
I mean, he's not getting it from his dad. He's not feeling seen by his father. And it seems like that is the crux of the issue here is.
Yeah.
His dad is just not willing to see him. And oh my gosh, it's causing so many problems for so many people as a result.
Yeah. If your son's on the cover of a newspaper, can you just acknowledge it? Like everyone listening, if your son's on the cover of the newspaper in the future or now, can you just say, hey, wow, congratulations. Even just say something.
And
like the fact that he doesn't say anything just ticks me off.
I mean, he does say, wait, he says something. He says, they say humility is not thinking less of yourself, but just thinking of yourself less. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess
he seems
we don't know
fun.
Like, I guess we don't know enough about them, but every time we see him, he just seems like he's a jerk to Nate, and the mom doesn't seem like she's doing much to address that. So, I mean, Nate is an adult at this point who's living at home, but still.
I don't think he's living at home. Scene.
Oh, you don't think he's living there? Oh, I thought he was living there.
I got the impression that he went there to visit. Like, I kind of get the impression, right? Like, because he was walking there in the morning.
Okay. I take it back. I thought he was living there for some reason, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah. No. He also, I'm just thinking there's an episode where they're like, what's the worst that could happen? And he runs down a whole thing. But one of the things that is part of that list of the worst thing that could happen is he has to move back in with his parents.
You're right. Okay. Disregard. Listeners, disregard. In any case, his dad sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I think like it's twofold, right? Like more than one thing can be the problem in this case. His dad is being an asshole. And Nate, buddy, you're grown up. You gotta release the notion that your dad is the only approval that matters. Because that's kind of what it seems like. And like at some point, and I mean, this is a mark of like, I think, moving into adulthood is acknowledging that there are inevitably going to be people in your life who are not going to give you, they're not going to see you, and they're not going to give you what you want in a situation. Like, and I think it's particularly true of our family members. I mean, I certainly, like, I would say that, like, there are elements of Nate's father in several relatives I have, they'll like, it doesn't matter what you do, it's still like the, instead of just being like, that's cool, it's like, well, what's the next thing? Like, you got this job, but you're not making enough money, or you have that house, but the, like, you know, I don't know, the windows are shitty, or right. Like there's, it's always something. It's always like, well, what's the next thing? And you have to be able to release that. It's really hard, but.
Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like what I'm hearing you say is that you have to see yourself on some level, especially if you're not getting that external approval from, maybe that's not what you're saying, but that's what's coming through for me as I'm listening. Like, yes, it is so beautiful when we have relationships where we feel seen, but Nate seems to be struggling right now for all kinds of reasons. And this may be a moment where he could be giving that acknowledgement to himself right now. I mean, I think of moments as well, like as you were just describing that, I was thinking about moments with family members or friends where I like, I'm waiting for them to see me in this way. Like, I want to be seen for this thing. Like, look at this great thing I did, or look at this, you know, whatever it is, great thing I did, you know, like not epic like what Nate did, but like, I'm thinking about like when I get back from a trip and I have this moment of like really wanting to like show my parents photos and they just like don't really care about the photos, right? Like, I have these memories of being a child and an adult and being like, don't you want to look at all the photos with me, and them not wanting to. And those are moments where you just have to turn inwards and like, be like, wow, like, again, I'm just like sharing my story, but like, wow, we did have a great trip. I don't need someone else to acknowledge this for me to be like, I had a great trip and I feel happy looking at my photos or whatever the thing is. Right. I can feel good about this inside myself, whether this person who I am in relationship with is acknowledging me in the way I want to be acknowledged or not.
Right. I mean, the difference between internal validation and external validation, right? Internally being able to know that the trip was fun or what you did was amazing. Yeah. I think it's really hard when it's somebody who you care deeply about their opinion. And I think it's smart of the show to demonstrate this in terms of a father-son dynamic, because I think like our parents are, for the most part, their opinions matter a lot to us. And we seek their approval. And so to not get that is, I mean, it's upsetting, certainly. And I can see why it leads to Nate being, you know, he has this layer of hostility and anger that is just like just under the surface that takes the smallest little like pinprick to bring out. And I can see where it comes from. And I also am so annoyed at him for how he's treating people.
I know. I mean, here he is getting all of this external validation. We see him in every scene, looking at his phone, looking at all the different acknowledgments of him in these different ways. Like all, I mean, sure, not all of them are favorable, but most of them are, at least in what we see, like that he's getting all of this acknowledgement and recognition. And still, it still just doesn't seem like enough for him to be able to like fully feel, like you said, whole or solid on his own. So instead he does, I mean, a couple episodes ago, you were talking about punching down. And it just seems like he's then just decides to start doing that.
Yeah. I that's funny. I was thinking about that today as we were getting ready for this episode, is like, this really demonstrates how he really sought out the people of the least power that he could and just dunked on them in a way that was cruel. Like Beard identifies it and says what you did was cruel and weird. And I mean, the way that he takes so much out on the other kit man, who he's treating in much of the way of some of the players used to treat him, and just replicating that like cycle of abuse to that poor guy who is like just trying to be part of the team and do his job. It's interesting. I was thinking about how that becomes a cycle, because when something negative like that happens to us, I think like sometimes the inclination is to turn around and be like, well, I had to go through this, so now you, person who are in that position I once was, have to go through it, right? Like it seems like that's what's part of what is happening for Nate. And I just want to say, I fucking hate that mentality. And I hate it in so many places.
Yeah.
We had, when I was playing sports in college, they did hazing. Like, we were hazed by the senior class, or, you know, the upper class people. And I distinctly remember, like, first of all, it was miserable and sucked. And then when I was an upperclassman, I was like, absolutely not. We're not pulling that bullshit. Like, just because we went through it. And their reasoning was like, well, we went through it, so you have to do it. And you're like, that's not a reason. Like,
no, it's not a good reason. It's not a good reason. Someone was terrible towards me, so I'm going to be terrible towards someone else. Yes, people do that all the time, but it's not a very evolved way of thinking.
Yeah, but it does totally seem like that's part of what's going on with Nate here. Yes. Is it's like, I had to go through that, so you have to go through it. You walked into this kumbaya team where everyone is kind and supportive. No, you're going to have to go through the shit that I went through too. And it like, it just sucks to see.
Yeah, he's just not, he's not using his power well, whether it's with the Kitman or the ways that he's interacting with Colin. And we know that, you know, Colin was a jerk to him, right? Wasn't he one of the ones who was a jerk? I'm trying to remember who was like a jerk to him in season one. Like, Colin was a jerk to him, and like, but it does seem like most people are moving on, and he's stuck in this like way of thinking that isn't going along with everyone else. And yet he also seems to also really want Ted's approval, right? He's like, did you tell, like, when he's talking, is it Beard or somebody that he's like, did you tell Ted what I did, you know? And I mean, he does, at least he apologizes towards the end of the episode. Like, he does apologize at one point, and the team embraces him. I mean, literally embraces him around that. And it's like, is that going to be enough? Like, is that enough now for you?
Yeah, I think it was, that whole apology was interesting, because one, it was like a weak ass apology for how cruel he was, I thought.
Yeah.
I didn't write down exactly what he said.
I didn't write it down either. Yeah.
I did write, I'm looking at my notes, it says in bold, weak. So.
Well, and I guess, yeah. And also, I guess it's after that, I'm just looking at my notes and seeing that it was after that then that he still goes back to the Kitman and is like, the whole Wonder Kid jersey situation, which is like, yeah, I mean, he's really struggling to, like, I mean, everybody else seems to be like in good humor about it, right? And he's like, not, he's like, even corrects them and says, like, I said Wonder Kind, which we all know that he didn't say.
Right. He can't just accept that he like said something, he was sort of a ding dong, and just like laugh at himself. And I think like this is how we understand like what is like the trigger point for Nate is he has no self-confidence or sense of worth, right? Like, that's what that means. Because when people feel good about themselves and confident and have good self-esteem, they can laugh at themselves when they act like a ding dong, right?
Yeah, like Ted blew bubbly water all over everyone in like the first episode.
Yes. You know? And he can like laugh about that. Or I mean, earlier in this episode, Roy like makes a joke about how much hair he leaves in the drain. Like,
right.
Like, when we all understand that we have things that could be perceived faults, or you know, like I said, I like to think of it as the way you're a ding dong, and like, we all have them. And the best way to deal with that is to just like own it and kind of laugh and like move on, which is really what it seems like everyone else wanted to do. And Nate just like cannot, because I think he just has no self-confidence or self-worth. And so any perceived slight is like detrimental to him.
Yeah. I mean, Beard says do better, right?
Yeah.
Beard calls him in. Says do better. Thank goodness Beard saw him. I felt so relieved in that episode, in that scene, when you see that Beard has witnessed Nate do these things, right? It's like, Beard is sort of this omnipresent character in this show. And also, I really appreciate that Beard did step in and say, hey, that's not okay. Like, thanks, Beard.
Yeah, I like how direct. I mean, I think Beard sees Nate. Like, talk about being seen.
Seriously. And, you know, I mean, we didn't talk about this as much, but Ted's seeming a little distracted at this point, right? And so Ted is not seeing that. I mean, even that, when the apology takes place, Ted's like, is this something I need to know about, right? Like, he's not seeing as much right now, because as what happens sometimes, we turn inwards and we are focusing on ourselves working through something. And so, yeah.
Right. He can't focus as much on Nate because he has to deal with his own shit right now.
Like the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why Beard, I mean, you know, when we're thinking of teams, that's why Beard, one of the reasons Beard is there, right? He's an assistant coach. He's there to pick up some of that slack when Ted does drop the ball on things. Like that's why you have a team around you. So yeah, I think I'm not thrilled about what's going on with Nate.
Me either. And we're reminded that Ted's struggling, just to go back to that, when Trent Crim comes up to him towards the end of the episode and is like, can I get an official statement about that food poisoning thing? Right. Like Ted's working through some other stuff right now. Right. And, it seems like that will be something we continue to talk about.
Yeah, it is. It is weird to see Ted lie. Like,
yeah.
That was interesting because we haven't seen him lie. And like, I think everyone knew he was lying. I think Trent was like, okay, buddy.
Yeah. It seems that. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a favorite Tedism from this episode?
It wasn't from Ted, but it was from Roy. And it was when they're on the field and he goes, whistle. And they ask why he doesn't just use a whistle, and he says, my lips are sensitive to impure metals and whistles give me mouth hive.
Yeah, that's a great line. Thanks so much for listening to the PS Let's Talk Love podcast.
We want to send out a special thank you to Medium Build for our show music.
And if you enjoy this podcast, follow us anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you want to support us, it's super helpful if you could give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review sharing what you're loving right now. Really, we want to know.
And if you don't like it and you got this far, don't worry. You do not have to listen to us again. You can just forget this podcast exists and move along.
You can catch up with us on Instagram at ps.welovelove or follow us on TikTok at psconsulting.
If you're interested in private coaching or learning more about our online classes, go to pscurators.com to learn more and find free resources to support you.
See you next time.